Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
You're listening to Chief Concerns.
Hear ye, hear ye. My fellow brethren and sistren of the Chiefs clan.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Please, just like, be cool for once. Thank ye.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome to the Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We always have fun little different times when we swoop in with this show. I hope that you're happy to enjoy it whenever it is that we give it to you. Today, it's from 7 to 8 on a Thursday, and I'm happy to be here for lots of reasons. One, because I just like talking on the radio, and two, I like talking about the Chiefs and NFL things. And three, because this week of topics is just super good. You can always listen, by the way, on Sports Radio 810, or you can watch the show on the 810 Facebook page, as Beards comes in to move things around. Beards forgot to do something.
Nope, turning down the volume.
Beards has turned down the volume on the Facebook page. We have a different setup today. So Facebook or on air or however it is that you're enjoying this show, I hope you are in fact enjoying it. We're going to talk about some things that Patrick Mahomes said at OTAs today. Plus, I had a realization last night while I was going through doing my sort of early preseason predictions I got to fill out sometime this week, and I was realizing some things about the NFL in general, the NFC versus AFC, the AFC West, and the NFC in general specifically. Some interesting things in there that we'll talk about eventually as well. But the big story of this week is something that I'm sure most people are sick of, and so you may think that I would just avoid talking about it entirely, and I don't want to because it's... You might be sick of it, but I'm not. Not to tell you what you should care about, but I think that this conversation is also something that we can have in a way that's interesting and constructive. Because I think that for the most part, fatigue that comes from fans who are tired of having conversations anywhere in the vicinity of the national anthem in sports, I think it largely ends up being a fatigue because of a fatigue of arguing or a fatigue of having to deal with perspectives you don't ride with. I think that's a large part of it. And the largest part of the conversation we're having this week isn't really about the merit or demerits of taking either side in this. It's about the fact that the NFL just super bleeped this up. Like, almost to a comical level, the NFL took this issue, thought they were going to solve it, and made it worse. Which is, in a way, kind of awesome. Because you are operating as this behemoth, as this unstoppable force in the American landscape, specifically in American sports. And because of your own size and success when you're the NFL, you have the opportunity to have some of these missteps and not have them be fatal in a way that a lesser league may have to worry about. But because they're able to keep buying themselves more time in the spotlight because everybody loves the league so much, they get to keep making these mistakes, and we can keep looking at them as fans, as commentators, radio hosts, whatever. We can look at these decisions and go, wow, they did it again. And the NFL did it again. At this point, I'm going to assume that you've got the gist of it, the very simplified version of the anthem. The NFL's new national anthem-based policy here is that teams and players can stay in the locker room or they can come out for the national anthem, but if there's any sign of quote-unquote disrespect, then the club will incur a fine. This in and of itself is interesting because it takes the onus away from the league and even to an extent away from the players and makes it about the team. So imagine if there's a team that just says, nope, we're never going out there for the anthem. We're not going to deal with any of this bleep. The Steelers did that at one point last year, but then Andrew Villanueva came out anyway and stood for the anthem. Former military guy, like, totally makes sense. But if that happens, then teams have to deal with the backlash as an un-American or unpatriotic team, which is, in theory, better for the league, not better for the teams, not better for the players. I digress. Regardless of that phrasing and the team-based side of things, this is a tremendous failure of policy for the NFL. And I'm not saying if the rule is just or unjust, or if it's reasonable or unreasonable. We might talk about that later. I'm not sure. We might get there. But inarguably, this policy is failing to do the thing that the NFL said it wanted to do, which is, again, kind of remarkable. Especially Jerry Jones was very outspoken a few days ago. He said, we want to get back to football. Want it to be about football, which is something that I'm assuming most people are cool with. Like, yeah, I would like my football to be about football, I guess, if I could get that, please. And this was also painted as a sort of compromise between the different perspectives, and this is not getting back to football, and it's not a compromise. Again, the language in these last 2 days has been mind-boggling. Because they talk about wanting to stay out of politics, and then they, quote, mandate, quote, respect for the flag and the anthem. And then they, quote, compromise without consulting the players or the NFLPA, which is something that will come up in the next collective bargaining agreement, to be sure. And the NFL, at this point, is simply doing one thing while saying they want the opposite. And I was in a conversation on Twitter, and by the way, while we're on this issue, which I know is just hypersensitive, and even though I think the spirit of it right now is kind of dunking on how the NFL screwed this up again, but you can always tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter, or you can comment on the Facebook page, on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page. And at some point throughout the show today, I'll look at the mentions, I'll look at the comments, and we'll talk about them. If you've got a new perspective on it that I haven't said or considered, or if you even feel like I haven't made your voice clear on it, I'll do that and we'll talk about it. I'm super cool with that. But I was having a conversation on Twitter, and a lot of these conversations have been helpful and constructive, which is encouraging. But one of the conversations ended in a helpful reminder that I think we should have here, that we're really talking about two separate issues. There are really two issues being discussed. One is the NFL making its money, and the other one is a fan discussion about patriotism and protests and anthems and nationalism and social justice. There are two separate discussions that are related only by context, because the second discussion is infringing on the first, at least in the NFL's mind, even though the NFL, their ratings have not declined anything outside of the norm of overall television ratings and cable ratings and everything. I digress. I saw another graphic earlier today that over a recent period of time, Fox News and ESPN have declined by the same percentage by subscribers and everything. Just cable in general, TV in general, has lesser viewership as we find other ways to consume television and visual media. I digress. But the NFL is at least concerned that the discussion, which is issue number two, is getting in the way of issue number one, which is the NFL getting that money. Those two conversations really need to be discussed separately, and we'll discuss them separately. And I like both of those discussions separately. They're related by context. They're linked together by context, not by content. So my statement here, my thesis, my understanding, my perspective, is that the NFL did not accomplish what they wanted to accomplish with this ruling, and if they did anything, it was stoke the flames on something that has, I'm not going to say died out, but I will say has cooled, at least. So that's the inverse of what they wanted to accomplish. But what did they actually accomplish? Well, they got rid of the photos and the videos of players kneeling on the sidelines. Those are going to be gone now. They're pushing any conscientious objectors into the locker room. Those guys will be back there probably. We'll get to that also. That might, like, the punishments for this rule are not clear. And the Jets CEO has made some statements that I think are really interesting on this. They gave individual teams the option to hold their players in the locker room, which we talked about, and then that makes the whole issue a team-by-team basis, which I really don't think, again, helps the NFL. And importantly, again, this is not a compromise. And this isn't a solution either. This is very much throwing a rug over the stain on your carpet and not trying to clean it out. The NFL has a stain in the carpet, at least on an issue of the relationship between owners and players and what players are looking for, what owners are doing. And the owners just got a rug. The owners got a pretty gross, not terribly efficient or effective rug and just rolled it out over the stain on the carpet. Because no players were kneeling during the national anthem because they wanted to stay in the locker room instead. So responding this way is not helpful. The timeline here is that first there was a purposeful non-participation when Colin Kaepernick stayed on the bench, and then Kaepernick moved to a knee upon talking with a military member about how he can take a more respectful posture that wouldn't be seen as an attack on the military. He tried. Kaepernick tried. This military member tried, and we didn't listen, I suppose. That one's on us, really. But, you know, Kaepernick's out of job. But that the point originally here was never about just staying in the locker room during the national anthem. The point from the beginning here was about not standing for national anthem of a country that wasn't meeting the standards for bringing a just response to racial injustices. That was Kaepernick's starting point on this. And then replying to, hey, please notice this racial injustice with, fine, you can stay in the locker room, really is not a constructive compromise. It's not a solution at all. It's a rug over the stain in the carpet. So that's a failure there. They didn't do that. And they also didn't depoliticize their sport, which is what I imagine the NFL would really like to do ideally. Part of this, eventually, we are going to have to use the T word. Because whenever Donald Trump brought this to the forefront of his base and his agenda setting, which is something I wrote extensively about my little over a year ago, agenda setting theory is fascinating. If you want to listen, we have the NBA game follows us today, so we have to be out right at 8. But like, if you want to just tweet me and you want me to send you my extensive research on agenda setting theory, and then we can just chat about it on Twitter, you just let me know. I'm so ready. But Donald Trump making that a part of his agenda, the agenda that he set, not as an agenda as in it being terribly calculated or whatever, but it's something that he put into the public consciousness in a new way with a new angle. Whenever he did that, it became a political platform in a big way. And eventually I'll talk about how the response from Trump and Mike Pence, which happened right after the ruling, impacts if the NFL did or didn't accomplish their goal here. I digress for now. But they did not depoliticize their sport. I got a tweet from Matt a couple days ago when we were talking about this. And he said, I think they set a strong message. Protest all you want, just not at work. Football games are not a canvas for political statements. It's a game. Glad the NFL is making it about the, all caps, game. For 3.5 hours, we get to sit and cheer our teams on and forget about things. And this response is wild to me. And I hope, I'm not sure how popular of a response that I'm about to give you is. I don't know if this is something people hear about very often. I didn't hear about it, at least before this issue started really hitting the top of the zeitgeist, the public zeitgeist, I suppose. But that response is wild to me, to say, the NFL said this is not a canvas for political statements. Because as far as I can figure, if you really want to get politics all the way out of your sports, which again is not something I'm railing against, I don't mind my sports and politics interacting. I don't mind my peas and carrots touching in that way. I enjoy sports and politics. I find both of them really interesting, but I don't mind if you don't, I guess. I don't mind. I certainly don't mind if you want to consume them both separately. That's fine. But if you truly want to depoliticize your sport completely, then why wouldn't you be in favor of getting the national anthem out of your sport completely? Why would you not stop flyovers and big flags and testaments to the military and everything? That's how you depoliticize your sport. You say, we're not going to do any of this. We're just not going to do it. We're going to show up and then we'll have our lineups announced and then we're going to have the kickoff. Usually the answer to that is because you respond negatively to politics that you don't yourself own, that you want your own political perspectives shown in places. That's not always true, but it's often true. But I think the NFL could have done two things here to actually depoliticize their sport. One would be to ditch the anthem entirely, or you could just keep all the players in the locker room until after. You can set that precedent. This isn't depoliticizing, though. This is where I disagree with the tweets that said the NFL did successfully depoliticize their sport on some level. They really don't think they did. They didn't depoliticize their sport. They're just trying to hide the dissenters, which, if that's what you're saying you're doing, then maybe the NFL did successfully do that. We'll find out. Some of the reports recently make it sound like there are going to be plenty of players that go ahead and do away with this concern, with this rule, and just kind of rock it. Go out on the sidelines, take any anyway, what happens? There aren't snipers in the press box. The Jets CEO said that if players want to go do that, then the team will pay the fines, as is set up in this new rule, and that's going to be it. So we'll see how that goes. But if you want to depoliticize your sport, take the anthem out of it, or keep your players in the locker room. Now, again, the president has already said players shouldn't be in the locker room. He also went on to say, you should be out there. If you're not out there, you shouldn't be playing, and maybe you shouldn't be in the country, which is a pretty wild statement, but I don't think we have to unpack that. I don't know. Maybe we do. That makes me kind of queasy. Stand for the anthem, or maybe you shouldn't be in the country, is not my politics, but I digress. He did talk about this, though. But a response that I've gotten in response to saying, if you want to depoliticize, take the anthem away from this entirely, a response that I've gotten plenty is, what political statement does the national anthem make? Why is that political? Isn't it just nostalgic? Isn't it just a thing that we do? And it's a fair response. It's a fair question. But these pregame rituals that we do are seeped in political statements. And we've seen that in the backlash to quote-unquote not respecting it. If it wasn't seeped in meaning and political statements, then why would anyone care if you don't stand for it? But regardless, by serving as a symbol of the country, then it can be seen as a variety of pro-country, pro-political statements, either the state of the country in general or on a particular issue. It's very political. We talked about this a couple days ago. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago over on Almost Entirely Sports, my show over on ESPN Kansas City. With a quote from Bomani Jones of ESPN, something he said on his podcast that I just thought was fascinating. The quote was, "So much of America views the national anthem as neutral to politics, as though it is not a political expression in and of itself." And I thought that was really eye-opening, because this allows for standing for the national anthem to be something that is neutral to politics, as though it is not a political choice. It's the thing that you do whenever you don't want to make a statement. However, not standing for the anthem becomes a huge political statement, but that's reinforced by the cultural norm, which is rise, remove your caps, and everyone does that. I think it's interesting. But after the ruling went out, Vice President Mike Pence tweeted out a screenshot of the headline about how the NFL's got a new rule where players have to stand for the anthem or stay in the locker room. And he tweeted that out with hashtag winning and an American flag emoji, which is legitimately something that Charlie Sheen was doing in like 2008. But I digress. Kind of weird. It was weird to see a vice president go hashtag winning. I was expecting like tiger blood after that. It's another Charlie Sheen thing. Remember when we all let Charlie Sheen have a thing for a while? Like, Charlie Sheen just became... Charlie Sheen was president for 6 months. He went on like a comedy, like a stand-up tour, and then got like booed out of every viewing. That was a weird time. It's good to remember how weird that was, because it makes me feel a little bit better about now. Like Charlie Sheen could be president, and that would also present, I would say, a lot of issues. So maybe things aren't so bad. I don't know. But Pence tweets that out as a win for his politics, as a win for his base or whatever. And that is an example of how this isn't a politically neutral move. It does not politically, well, it doesn't depoliticize the league. It doesn't depoliticize the pregame rituals. It doesn't depoliticize the anthem. You can tell in the reaction if it is political or not. And to that end, I think the NFL pretty obviously failed here. Like I said, there have been reports now that there are some players who weren't planning on doing anything that are now going to do things this upcoming season as a response to this choice and this rule. That's a failure on the NFL's part. That's the thing you were trying to avoid. And they didn't. All right, we're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, I want to talk about one other place the NFL's failed on this. I imagine there are tweets or comments somewhere that we can look at. Beards has been kind of smirking throughout most of the end of this segment. Is this a comment-based smirk?
I'm a rock star from Mars.
Was that a Charlie Sheen quote?
Yes.
Oh, man, we did this all wrong. We should have done this whole segment where I make a statement about something, and then you give a Charlie Sheen quote. It would have really lightened the mood.
I'm by winning.
By winning is one of my favorites because that one is such an open book.
I'm an F-18, bro.
Forgot about that. Do you have a timestamp on these? Like, is this a? Do you remember? Can you pinpoint
2011.
What you were saying? 2011.
Okay. Yeah,
I aged it by 3 years. Got another one.
There's a new sheriff in town, and he has an army of assassins. I don't remember that one.
Do you have more?
Yes.
Okay, go. What's the next one?
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
We'll be right back on Chief Concerns.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.
I'm a battle-tested bayonet, bro.
Welcome back to Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Briscoe. That's Beards McFly. Quoting Charlie Sheen.
The prophet.
Not only a prophet, a sage. Like, I don't know. Charlie Sheen is either on top of a mountain or in a ditch right now, I'm sure. And honestly...
Or like in a ditch on top of a mountain.
Or in a ditch on top of a mountain. That's a good point. So again, you can always leave comments on the Facebook page. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe. We've had a couple tweets come through earlier. Ryan tweeted me and says, "This sucks. You're a super lib. Hard to take you seriously now. Oh, well." Aw. At least super lib sounds like a bad superhero. We could make it a little stinger for me. Do I sound like it? Do I really? Also, it's hard to take me seriously now. Do the Charlie Sheen quotes do anything for you? If you're just going to read another Charlie Sheen quote.
I was trying to find a short one. Dang it. Oh, no, I already read that one. Dang it.
I've had so many conversations about this on so many levels where I really just don't know exactly. Your mic's still on, Beards. Oh, he knows. Okay, just do it. Just read the...
I have one speed. I have one gear. Go!
I feel like I've walked through this just as gracefully as humanly possible. Lots of people still don't like it. That's okay. Somebody tweeted in, and this wasn't really the spirit of his thing, but I've seen other people tweeting basically this, so I'm going to go ahead and use it again. Said, "I'm old enough to remember when celebrating the country wasn't a social issue." And I think that part of this is a blind spot that a lot of us have to figure out. Like, for me, I'm not feeling... I'm a white dude. I'm a straight white dude. I'm 23. I went to a private university. Like, I don't have a whole lot of, I don't know, like, broad brush hardships. I've done pretty good. Nice middle class family. Like, I eat a lot of ramen now, but that's because of the line of work I chose, not because I've been governmentally oppressed or anything. But I think it's a blind spot that I think that a lot of us have to see that... you have to be able to understand why a blanket celebration of the country is problematic for a subset of citizens who don't feel like an equal part of the country. If you can't do that, then having this conversation is really, really difficult. So, yeah. yeah, I don't know. I'm going to leave it at that because there are some other things around that I like. Ryan tweets in and says, I don't really care about the flag or the anthem, but I don't like social justice warriors. It tickles me that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid don't have jobs. That's weird for me. Like, if you don't care, why does that tickle you so much? Or what's wrong with people who care about social justice and equality? If you don't agree with what they're saying, that's fine. But you've got to say that, at least. You can't just say, I don't care about the concept of justice. I don't know. Weird to me. Whatever. The NFL also continued to bleep this up by originally Roger Goodell saying the vote was unanimous, and then we found out that Jed York, the owner of the 49ers, abstained from the vote, and then we found out that there wasn't even a vote!
Didn't have to abstain then.
Yeah, what are you abstaining from? But there was apparently not even an actual vote. Everyone knew how everyone was going to vote, and then so they just rolled with it? And then, like, just put the thing in. Also, I saw a report that Mark Davis was one of the most articulate people on the topic of social justice, which I might be believable. I just, his haircut makes it really hard for me to take that seriously. I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny, though. But so there's a tweet here about Jed York. It said, he abstained from the anthem vote, thinks a deeper look is required. And Jets CEO Christopher Johnson is a part of a really interesting story. I just think this is amazing, not because this is the right or wrong thing to do. I'm not here to give you that right now. But the irony of this, I think, is kind of funny. Jets CEO Christopher Johnson says that he/the organization will pay the fines for any Jets players who kneel on the field during the anthem, which is, by the way, the letter of the law that teams are going to be fined anyway. So the CEO, Christopher Johnson, was saying, hey, if our players want to continue to act in this way and go out and make their voice heard in this way, then we're going to just pay those fines and we'll just take it. The amazing part of it, I think, is that Christopher is running the team for his brother, Woody Johnson, who is not running the team currently because Woody is Donald Trump's ambassador to the UK. Which is just the irony of that I find funny. And like Art Rooney has talked about how he thinks that standing with a raised fist constitutes disrespect of the anthem. Maybe it does. But either way, you are seeing so much wiggle room here. This is how the NFL screwed it up. And I talked about this a little bit during the commercial break on Facebook. I'm also talking during the commercial breaks because just talking on air isn't enough for me, I guess.
You can't shut up.
I can't shut up. I cannot stop talking.
I deal with it every day.
Yeah, Beards is a patient man.
Bring me Dr. Clown shoes.
What?
That was another quote. Bring me Dr. Clown shoes. I'm just going to interject with these every once
good,
in a while.
Good, I like that. Alex said, how did they make it worse? That's where they made it worse. This is going to pop up constantly forever.
Winning.
So there's a lot of blind spots I think that a lot of people have. I'm trying my very best to see through them, both the ones that are aligning with my sort of current political persuasions and also the ones that don't. I'm trying really hard to do that. I hope that most people listening are also. A lot of the conversations I've had are really good. There are a couple of people that said they've listened to the show over the last couple of weeks and that their perspectives have evolved, which is unbelievably encouraging to me because sometimes I look at Twitter and I don't believe that's even fathomable. And I had a conversation with a guy on Twitter who is a grandpa, and I'm 14 years old, basically. And I don't think we ended up agreeing on the place that nationalism and sports should intertwine. But we talked about it for a handful of tweets back and forth, and neither one of us ever had to call the other person a mean name. It was amazing. We were capable of doing that, and it blew my mind. There's also a follow-up question that I think is fair that I do want to talk about OTAs and stuff. I really do, but this is such a packed issue, and I want to make sure that I don't leave anybody out on this.
I thought this was a Chiefs show.
Was that a Charlie Sheen quote?
Yes, actually.
Well, that's amazing. Wow, what? How convenient. There's a question about, like, hey, well, where do you see the national anthem and sports fitting in together? Where do you draw the line? And that's one of the things I like to ask back, actually, which is, like, we don't play it before the previews at movies, and we don't play it before, like, concerts and stuff. Like, where do you do it? What entertainment events do you play it before? Do you play it when you wake up every morning? Like, how do you decide what is and isn't worthy of playing the national anthem before it? That's asked of me. For me, I would say if there is something that is inherently nationalistic, if there is a governmental function or a military function or at the Olympics where you're playing under the flag, literally, then go for it. I'm not here to tell you the national anthem shouldn't ever be played anywhere. But the juxtaposition with sports, I always find really interesting. And also, unnecessary. If we started doing that today, I think most people are like, why are we playing the national anthem before our sporting events? This is weird. Why would we do this? But we've been doing it for long enough that it becomes normal. And then you go, why do we do this? And then someone goes, why do you hate America? If you don't like it, leave. And we kind of devolve there. I find it to be a terribly interesting topic. So I understand that there's a very good chance that I stick with this conversation longer than some of you would like, as a self-indulgence, because I find it to be just a terribly intellectually stimulating. I think it's a fun topic.
CBS picked a fight with a warlock.
Oh, I knew there was a warlock one. I knew there was a warlock-based Charlie Sheen quote. And this also has to be so confusing for the people on Facebook who can't hear beards today.
Or just people that joined late.
Also fair.
And they're just driving there listening to this 12-year-old talk about NFL kneeling anthem, and then all of a sudden you just hear somebody in the background go, if you're a part of my family, I will love you violently.
That sounds like a quote I had.
You're Charlie Sheen?
Well, Charlie Sheen says that if you're part of his family, he'll love you violently, and I've previously called myself an aggressive cuddler. So maybe Charlie Sheen and I are torn from the same cloth.
In a consensual sense, yes.
Yeah, 100%, yes. Maybe Charlie Sheen and I are cut from the same cloth that way. I've always sort of seen him as a distant cousin. Maybe not all that distant. All right, I'm done on the. Hold on. I'm going to give everyone one more pass. You can always watch the show on Facebook again, at the 810 Facebook page. Go ahead, Beards. I heard you turn your mic on. Just do the thing.
I have a disease.
Word I can't say on radio.
I cured it with my mind.
Oh, I cured that disease with my mind. Charlie says, when that song was written, black people were being brought from Africa and being shipped to this country to be slaves. People of color in this country are using the platform that they have earned to the point to point out the fact that people of color in many ways are still considered 2/3 of a person. And that has to change. White males don't like it. Big surprise. That's a perspective that I am super willing to hear out because it's not mine. That's interesting. I'm guessing someone drove into a ditch just now. You can also comment. There hasn't been an aggressive comment in either direction I don't think I've addressed. I'm all about addressing comments. Getting those good retweets, whatever it takes. All right, that's what I wanted to talk about. So we're going to take a break now, and we'll have a big, long segment whenever we come back. We're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes from OTAs today. I'm going to explain to you why I'm having a hard time not picking the Chiefs in the AFC West and some super too early preseason predictions. And if that's not something that we can bind together over, what are we going to bind together over? AFC West winning? Patrick Mahomes? Charlie Sheen? Can't think of one objectionable thing about any of those things. We'll talk about that next.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.
If you barred my brain for 5 seconds, you'd be like, dude, can't handle, unplug this. Word I can't say on the radio. It fires in a way that maybe not from this terrestrial realm.
We could start every segment of the radio for the rest of time with a Charlie Sheen quote, and it would not be enough for me. He had a cocaine problem, right?
He had an everything problem.
That's true. That's true. I can't believe he's alive. He is still alive, right?
Yes.
We would know if Charlie Sheen had died. Someone would have told us by now, I think. Also, though, there's a guy on the planet who could have been dead for the last 5 years and we just never figured it out. Charlie Sheen would be up there on that list. I would understand forgetting
him
that.
And, like, Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix is a pretty good call.
He had that stint there for a little bit where he just kind of went off the deep end
and
was, like,
go, yeah.
And was, like, making that movie or whatever.
Shia LaBeouf also.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf's one of the same categories.
Come on, bro. I won Best Picture at 20. I wasn't even trying. I wasn't even warm!
Was that towards the tail end of Charlie Sheen's fame, revitalized fame? That one wasn't as strong. That was not one of his strongest quotes.
It was pretty good, though.
It was fine.
I'm running out of the really good ones.
Right, I know. Warlocks and Tiger Blood and winning and by winning. And there was that whole, like, Songify the News thing.
New Sheriff really in Town, and he has an army of assassins.
An army of assassins.
That one I hadn't heard before. It's really good. Oh, here's a good one. I'm on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen. It's not available to you because if you try it, you will die. Your face will melt off and your children will weep over your exploded body.
That's actually the one I've been waiting for. I could not remember what the topic was. One of them I knew was good, and it was, he's on a drug. It's called Charlie. Just read the next. Go ahead. Fine.
I'm sorry, man. I've got magic and I've got poetry in my fingertips. You know, most of the time, and this included, and this includes naps.
Patrick Mahomes spoke at OTAs today. Out at the Chiefs' voluntary organized team activities.
They're not optional, but they're required.
They are voluntary.
Uh-huh. Quote.
Everyone was there this year. So that takes away that free radio topic. So we got to thank the NFL for giving us this one instead. Thank you, NFL, for giving us a topic. But Mahomes spoke today. Several players did, and they listened to all of it, and most of it wasn't that interesting. Mahomes said two things, though, that I thought were pretty good. He talked about Sammy Watkins. He also talked about the offense, and we'll start with the offense one. He was asked about kind of the build of the offense and the process of building an offense for Patrick Mahomes, and I thought this topic was really interesting because that's a concern that we've had a lot of, I think, in the last year or so. I mean, really, since drafting Patrick Mahomes, you go, oh man, is Andy Reid going to get Pat Mahomes and then try to make him run the Alex Smith offense? I've always said no, and because Andy Reid isn't an idiot. Andy Reid has some tendencies, but he's not a fool, obviously. He's a fantastic NFL mind. And so I never thought that this was something we'd have to really be concerned with. And I think week 17 last year also really helped sort of cushion some of those concerns. But the thing that Mahomes said today I thought was really interesting. This is Patrick Mahomes from today discussing the give and take process that makes up the building of this offense.
We have an open conversation between me, Coach Reed, Eric Bieniemy, and Coach Kafka. We really talk and try to see. They see what I like, and I tell them what I like. And if we both like something, we try to put that in. And if there's something that one of us is disagreeing on that we don't think will work, we try to get out here. We see about it, and if it works, then we'll keep it in. If not, then we'll throw it away and hold off on it.
That's very collaborative. It's very collaborative in nature and in sound. Where it's a we thing. I think at one point in there he said both of us, which was kind of funny because it cut Eric Bieniemy and Mike Kafka out of the discussion, out of the equation, and it made both of us, obviously him and Andy Reid, and I think that's a good thing. Also, like, the fact that Andy Reid respects Patrick Mahomes enough at least to know his own body and capabilities and everything, I think is a really good sign. Andy Reid could absolutely say, I'm Andy Reid, you're basically a rookie, I'll tell you what's good for you. But, and Mahomes could have said that today and I wouldn't have come in and hit the panic button. I probably would have played the sound of Patrick Mahomes saying, you know, it's really up to Coach Reid. Coach Reid does this, Coach Reed's the mind, and I execute it. I would have probably cut and played that sound for you, but I don't think I would have panicked. This direction, though, I think is really encouraging. I think that's a good piece of news. I think that's a good sign. If you were worried about it being an Andy Reid offense and an Andy Reid offense looking like an Alex Smith-based offense and that being the thing that gets you to Patrick Mahomes, I think you can rest easy. And we'll talk more about Mahomes and where this fits in the discussion I told you we were going to have earlier about the NFL predictions I started doing a little bit of and looking into the division specifically and all that. We'll get there in a second. But the other thing Patrick Mahomes said today was about Sammy Watkins. And you've probably seen the video by now. If you haven't, you should go find it. I think originally Watkins tweeted out the video and then he deleted them because the Chiefs don't want you to tweet things from OTAs, I guess. But by that point, it had been saved and re-disseminated throughout the internet. So you should go watch these videos of some catches that Sammy Watkins made today. Not that that makes you an NFL receiver, but it doesn't hurt. And Patrick Mahomes sounds pretty excited about exactly what Sammy Watkins is going to bring to this offense.
the first day was crazy. I mean, I think y'all might have saw on Twitter or something like that, but he, like, the first pass of all OTAs, he just was running a go route and just caught it one hand. And then later on in the practice, I thought I overthrew him, and I thought I threw an interception, and then it's just like he just saw a hand go out of nowhere and he brought it down. So, I mean, he's someone that's going to help this offense tremendously, and it's someone who works hard, and you really respect guys who got here and have that much talent but really get after it every single day.
I'm not going to read terribly far into that. He gets after it every single day thing, because you expect that at some point, right? Especially on a guy getting a big contract. But it's going to be like hard to get used to the amount of weapons around Patrick Mahomes. Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins on the outside with Travis Kelce and I guess Chris Conley kind of in the middle, Kareem Hunt in the backfield, and I would argue a perfectly decent offensive line. Seriously, hard to get used to, because not only do we not ever see all those guys together, like last year felt like an embarrassment of riches when they had three of those four. If Sammy Watkins is a good receiver, It's going to be almost embarrassing, because it is so overwhelming, the talent around Mahomes. Also, you expect him to make guys better. Watkins did save him from a pick earlier today, though. A bunch of one-handed catches that one of them didn't have to be one-handed, but two of them did. One of them saved an interception, and then one of them was just a really fantastic catch. It's kind of startling, honestly. There's so much firepower there. The thing about Mahomes, though, that I had to reconsider. So the backstory quickly is, last couple of days I was going through and just filling out my division winners and then the NFC and AFC championship games, the Super Bowl and the MVP for 8-10 predictions you got to send in a week or something. End of the month, I think. And I was just going through doing all the mental math of, you know, what are the teams that I think have a real case to make for this, this, or that, and how do these divisions unfold and everything. The first thing that struck me is that there are like 8 NFC teams. Like half of the NFC is a legitimate contender to at least win like a playoff game. Like, I never even got to really considering the Lions, who are a perfectly decent team, because they're the third team in their division, and if they were in the AFC West, they'd probably be favored to win the division. I think that's probably true. At least they'd be a wild card contender. There are like 6 teams in the NFC that really could like be in a Super Bowl. The AFC has one clear favorite, a clear second place team, and then like 4 or 5 teams that could be in that next tier, but certainly aren't there now. The Patriots are the favorite. The Steelers are next, but that depends on if Roethlisberger is healthy. And then you find teams like the Texans and Jaguars, and I like the Colts whenever Andrew Luck is healthy. We may not see him healthy. Maybe the Chiefs, depending on what Mahomes is. That's what we're going to get back to. You find a bunch of teams with like big holes that you have to really, like, man, I don't know. I mean, if Deshaun Watson is great again, then maybe the Texans are that team. Last year they were really, really injured. So I have the Texans winning the AFC South. Because, like, oh man, the Jags defense is crazy, but they have Blake Bortles, which I will not. I'll pick the Jags to go 0-16. I won't actually. I think I have them as a wild card team at this point. Subject to change, of course. But the AFC really feels like it. I should have mentioned the Jags in that third tier, by the way. Like, not to put the Colts and the Jags in the same place. The Colts need a quarterback desperately. I guess the Jags do too, but the Jags have more everywhere else. But I found a really murky AFC, and I couldn't help but start to talk myself into the Chiefs. Maybe beyond just winning the division. Also, Hunter Henry tore his ACL in practice. The Chargers' number one tight end, the Chargers, the favorite in the division, lost their tight end as quickly as you can lose a guy in organized team activities. As quickly as you can be dealt a devastating blow, the Chargers were dealt one. And now they're Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen and whoever else fills in. Hunter Henry was next up. Also, Seth Kaiser, friend of this show and every show on the planet, he's all over the place, of The Athletic now, said he was watching the Chiefs and Chargers game, and he said, man, the Philip Rivers' arm is just gone, and no one is really talking about it. Like, close to Peyton Manning, his last year gone. That makes me raise my eyebrows. I hadn't thought about that. I want to go watch some Phil Rivers now. And so the Broncos have some really good defensive players. They upgraded their quarterback spot, but how much? Maybe a win or two? If it's two, which is a lot, they're 7-9. The Raiders are geriatric at this point. I have doubts about Derek Carr and John Gruden. The Chargers have the most to work with, but they just lost their tight end and their quarterback's on the way out. It eventually comes back to Pat Mahomes. It eventually comes back to Patrick Mahomes. And this is something that we've talked about in every level here. We can have every conversation you want about the Chiefs the whole way down. But if Mahomes is great, they're winning playoff games, plural. If he's good, they're probably winning the division. We'll have to get more into this, obviously. I mean, we'll have plenty of time to have this discussion throughout the season. Where do the Chiefs fit in exactly? But the more you buy into what Patrick Mahomes can be and do and give you, I think the more difficult it is to put away that optimism.
Look at what I'm dealing with, man. I'm just dealing with fools and trolls.
Fools and trolls. That should have been the name of this show. Talk to you next week. Bye, Mom.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.